Freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? And wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
I want to get the language right.
The V government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of media?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
Anti-Media Radio. I'm your host, S.M. Gibson. Still coming to you from beautiful San Diego, California. In the studio with us tonight, Mr. Nick Burnaby, the editor-in-chief of Anti-Media.
How you doing? Glad you're still here, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
And we have an absolutely special, wonderful guest, Ms. Carrie Wedler, one of our writers with Anti-Media, among many other things that she does. Carrie, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Yes, ma'am. So, as always, I'll run down the stats for the evening real quick. We've had 47 officers, same as yesterday, die in the line of duty so far this year. Last night, the number for Americans killed were 438 people killed by police officers. Today, it's 446. So since we talked to you last night, police officers have killed 8 people. That's just absolutely not.
8 people in... Since last night? I mean, that's crazy. That's insane.
So it's one every 3 hours?
Yeah.
How is, I mean, and like, you know, we cover this police brutality issue all the time. You know, it's like a regular thing for us. And we can't even keep up with all these. Like,
there's
8 people dead today because of the cops.
I mean, you couldn't write a story about every single one of them.
Yeah, man. And we've got a couple stories on the cops that we're working on right now. One of the big stories I saw that was, you know, being talked about today were these two kids in Washington, in Olympia, that were, you know, they got caught stealing beer. I mean, yes, they did steal beer, okay? And a cop...
That sounds like a death sentence.
Yeah, it actually does, and that's the thing, is that a cop rolls up, and because these kids had skateboards, and, you know, a skateboard, I guess, could be considered a weapon, even though technically skateboarding is not a crime, but I guess carrying a skateboard, it could be considered a weapon by these cops. The cops shot these two kids, two brothers, 21 years old, 23 years old. Two young kids.
Well, I had a skateboard when I was young, and I got a splinter from it. So, and it hurt really bad. So, I mean, it can be super dangerous. So
the cops might as well have just
It's a good thing that was
the cop.
Trial.
Yeah, they did them a the cop did them a favor by shooting them, protect them from getting hurt on the skateboard. You know,
exactly. I mean, you know, you get a helmet or just get shot. Either way, you know, you'll stay safe from that skateboard. Also, Saudi Arabia, 85 people have been beheaded. And in Chicago, with their wonderful gun laws, we've had 865 people shot this year, 146 homicides. So how's the gun laws working out there? yesterday was the big Rand Paul stand or whatever about the NSA Patriot Act. And today has been interesting because everybody's been able to kind of give their opinion about it. Congressman Peter King has come out and just said it was pretty much deplorable what he did. And Jeb Bush.
How dare you question the surveillance state?
Exactly. Jeb Bush.
What are you? What is he, some kind of terrorist? Or maybe he's just un-American.
Obviously he is. Well, it's about to get worse to show you how un-American what he did was. Because Jeb Bush said that, you know, he's an idiot, basically. But Edward Snowden came out and supported it. So, you know,
Edward Snowden's clearly a traitor. He's not allowed in our country. What have I just gone back?
Oh, he's dangerous.
Oh, yeah, fighting for our freedom.
I would prefer an endorsement from Edward Snowden over an endorsement from Jeb Bush.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for all of Rand's faults and this and that, that's a seal of approval right there to get Jeb Bush to talk bad about you.
Exactly.
And, you know, again, like this to me, and we touched on this last night, is that it's important to be advantageous with the buzz that is generated by this filibuster to talk about the Patriot Act and stuff. Whether you agree or disagree with Rand Paul, I happen to be an individual that disagrees with him on a lot of things, but I definitely appreciate what he did and drawing attention to the fact that our rights and our liberties are being trampled on. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. I was going to say being abused, but no, it's worse. They're completely being trampled on. They're acting as if the Constitution is a roll of toilet paper and not a rolled up scroll that's supposed to restrain the government.
Here's one. It's on right now. It's at the top of the Drudge Report, and the FBI has admitted that, yeah, guess what? No terrorism has been stopped. No cases of anything that's preventing anything has happened because of the Patriot Act and spying.
And what's funny is that they really won with the Patriot Act. They were one of the bureaus that got a lot of power because of its passage. So it's interesting that even they can admit that it really hasn't done anything.
Yeah, and you would think, you know, maybe it's just me being cynical, but you would think they would doctor a story up or say we did this or we did that.
They're like foiling terrorist plots.
Was Obama against the Patriot Act back when he was in the Senate?
He was, but...
But he voted for it, right?
He was vocally against it. To be honest, I don't know.
I'm sure. I know he signed the extension. He signed extensions
he's been
while
for,
in office.
Well, he's been a good patriot since he's been in office. So
yeah, you know what? Bringing that freedom home. You know what I mean?
It's a great act.
Well, the cool thing I think about the Rand Paul filibuster is that I saw an article today that said a majority of Americans are concerned about the Patriot Act. So at this point, he's just representing Americans, which happens so rarely. And I'm no Rand Paul enthusiast either, but I do respect him for doing this. Although it's predictable, I expected him to. It's very politically advantageous. A majority of Americans are concerned. He's pandering
to a lot
of people.
But you would think, like Peter King and Jeb Bush, like you would think they would read the writing on the wall and fly to it.
No, they can't, because their job isn't to be logical. Their job is to drive the debate that's going to take place in this country all the way into the neocon right. Mm-hmm. And what they have to do is say, okay, let's muddle this debate about whether we should or shouldn't be spied on and turn it into, should we be spied on massively or should we be spied on slightly less massively? That is Jeb Bush's role in this entire 2016 election. He's not going to win. There's no way in effing hell that fool's going to win. He's running to shift the debate into a very war hawkish corner and try to keep it pinned into that corner. And like we've been saying, I mean, I don't know how many times I want to beat this dead horse, but Marco Rubio is going to wind up looking like the guy that's the moderate in the middle, even though he is a George Bush in sheep's clothing.
And here's something I think is an interesting angle about the filibuster is so many people that kind of put Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Rand Paul kind of all in the same, you know, team basically, and they're all fighting for liberty. I think a lot of those people woke up a little bit yesterday and realized that Ted Cruz – and Marco Rubio are not there fighting for the stuff they care about. I mean, Rand Paul definitely scored points, but I think Cruz and Rubio look like idiots. You know, you would think they would have just come out and, you know, made a show of it, but they didn't.
Well, but they know that there's still at least a significant portion of the population that agrees with them and that's going to believe anything the government tells them, as long as they use the word security and terrorism and all of the talking points and
buzzwords. And that's what it is.
And I mentioned it last night as well. Part of Rubio's newest campaign push is the Keep America Safe strategy. And the whole and he's coined a term that was from the old neocons back in the 90s or in the early 2000s. The new American century, and this is what this is his new campaign slogan. He's like, I'm going to take America, I'm going to bring about the new American century, and I'm going to do this, but none of that even matters unless we're safe, and I'll keep you safe from all these bad guys. And Marco Rubio's...
If he's going to keep me safe from a bad guy, he needs to leave.
Exactly. This is Marco Rubio's campaign platform. It's a very hawkish platform when it comes to like civil liberty. Like basically he's saying, like, look, vote for me, I'm going to trample your rights, but I'm going to make sure that those bad terrorists don't get in. That's what he's saying.
No, I don't know if Rand Paul discussed it, because I'll be honest, I didn't watch the filibuster. I sort of just looked at the commentary. But for me, what's really staggering about the Patriot Act is that it's been used overwhelmingly in drug busts. And the same with, like, the sneak and peek warrants, which have been overwhelmingly used in drug busts.
He did hit on that.
Okay, yeah, I figured he would. That's a pretty important part of sort of debunking the Patriot Act. But I find it very interesting that, well, actually, I guess it's not interesting. He's always talking about civil liberties. He's been talking about the drug war for years. It's just interesting to me that Mark Rubio and Jeb Bush will never mention that. They'll never discuss the actual facts of the Patriot Act. They just want to keep pushing the propaganda.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Rubio can't, because Rubio, and I'm sure Bush too, but I know for a fact that Rubio is, you know, being funded by the private prison system, so the drug war is big business for him.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He needs the Patriot Act to keep his money flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that Obama stated yesterday, he put out a statement saying, hey, Congress, if you don't get your shit together and extend the Patriot Act or renew the Patriot Act, we're going to have to start winding down the NSA bulk data collection for Americans on Friday. That's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we don't see any action, they're going to slowly but surely start winding down this.
They don't need to slowly but surely do anything. They need to, and this is something Rand said. He called on Obama. He said, sign an executive order right now and end the whole thing. You know, be done with it immediately.
Well, because of that recent court ruling that basically said that everything that they were doing with the NSA when they were, you know, tapping into American data and spying on Americans, that court just ruled that it was illegal, right?
Right.
So that's why they have to wind it. If it isn't extended, they literally have to wind it down, or the court is going to start going in and
start
causing,
you know. But that's like saying if I go out and kill people, you need to stop killing people. You don't have to stop immediately. I mean, you can just, like, you know, let it taper off and just kill
people. Can continue to kill people if you and your buddies get together and sign that piece of paper.
Right.
Then you can keep killing people.
So, yeah.
And it, you know, to me, it's kind of like this, it just shows that there's no moral balance here. There's no moral compass. It's like, well, we know that it's illegal that people, you know, us spying on people is illegal. But as long as you guys pass this new bill, we're going to just go ahead and keep letting everybody do it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and these are things that not the Justice Department, but I don't know why the name is eluding me right now. The secret courts. The FISA courts, yeah. Like, they've been approving this for years. So I think it's, as much as it's cool that the ruling lately has been that it's unconstitutional, like, they've been acting as if it is for a very long time. And so I see this much less as really respect for people's civil liberties and much more just a political ploy, because they're realizing that people are extremely fed up and they don't really have a choice, which is fine. It's public pressure. It's forcing change, but it's not really coming from genuine intentions.
Right. I think you're absolutely right about that. I want to shift a little bit of topics. Carrie, you just had a story get published up on the antimedia.org just right before we went on air about the banks and the $5.7 billion fine. And we talked a little bit about this last night.
We touched on it a little.
Right, yeah. But we didn't really get into it. Tell us a little bit about the article and kind of why this isn't as good as it sounds.
All right. Well, $5.7 billion is a lot of money, and it's really been touted as a success against the financial elite. You know, the government stepping in and making sure that they're held accountable for the crimes they've committed. So what they were doing is it was manipulating global currency and interest rates as far back as 2007. So we're going back to things that caused the financial collapse. And since then, a lot of politicians' talking points and a lot of bureaucrats have sort of said that what they're going to do is they're going to step in, they're going to punish these regulations in order to deter further crime. And so what happened is these companies pled guilty. They admitted they did it. I mean, no one's going to jail for this, you know. They only destroyed a global economy, but they're just going to pay $5.7 billion. Right. And that's the thing is, Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, made it seem like it was this huge success. And I'll actually quote her. She said, "Today's historic resolutions are the latest in our ongoing efforts to investigate and prosecute financial crimes, and they serve as a stark reminder that this Department of Justice intends to vigorously prosecute all those who tilt the economic system in their favor, who subvert our marketplaces, and who enrich themselves at the expense of American consumers." That's really nice. Like, nice talking points, nice language. But at the end of the day, the whole point of the article is that, well, on the same day, news came out that banks had made $2.5 billion in overdraft fees in the first quarter, the second quarter. It was a single quarter of 2015. So essentially, those profits made up for the big banks, for the three big banks, which were JP Morgan, Chase, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America. They made $1.1 billion of that total, and that was 6% of their profits. So what is $5.7 billion? It's
right.
Absolutely nothing when you're considering the trillions of dollars they've received in bailouts from the government, from the Federal Reserve. When you're considering all of the income they have and all of the ways that they've screwed the economy, $5.7 billion is all for show. Just so Loretta Lynch can stand in front of a teleprompter and say that it's a success and people can think that the banks are actually being reined in, when the circumstances are that the financial elite still controls the government and the economy and nothing has changed.
All it is good PR. Right, it's a good PR with a little tiny. In your article, you said tap on the wrist, because that's what it really is. It's not a slap on the wrist. A slap is like, that'd be an overstatement. That would be a complete overstatement. It is a tap on the wrist, and it's nothing compared to the big picture of things. And we mentioned it last night. I mean, how big are these budgets? I mean, the NDAA itself is like almost $1 trillion. You know what I mean? And so $57 billion, it's like, okay. And here's the problem I have too with this whole settlement. It's like the people that were victims in this thing were a bunch of average people that maybe have their retirement tied up in these markets, have their pensions tied up in these markets, they have their investments tied up in these markets. The government fines them $5.7 billion. Who gets the money? The federal government. What in the hell are they going to do with it? Build Hellfire missiles with it? I mean, victims here aren't even getting restitution, man.
Exactly, especially when the banks are writing the regulations. Like, it's really hard to take restitution seriously when the banks are just putting it back into the system that they've rigged in their favor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's total hypocrisy. It's nothing but a PR stunt, and it gives them a little bit of credibility over at like the DOJ, and it's like, oh, look, we're actually going to hold people accountable and stuff. But it's like, no, you're not.
I mean, in my head, banks probably went to the banks and, they decided their own punishment, more than likely.
Exactly.
Because it's like, oh, we'll just do this, make a big show out of it.
Yeah, it was probably a compromise. Like, okay, do this, do that. And
I'm sure they had litigators.
Nobody's going to go to jail, even though the statement from the DOJ says that there were individuals sending messages to other individuals saying, hey, bet on this one, or hey, we're going to drop this one, or hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Why aren't those individuals going to prison, dude? You know what I mean? What happened to Bernie Madoff? What happened to
who's the
reality show star? Martha Stewart. Dude. Even Martha Stewart went to jail for this shit.
A celebrity went to jail.
Martha Stewart goes to jail for a little couple million dollars in fraud. These guys defraud the whole world for who knows how many billions, if not trillions. And oh, $5.7 billion fine, which is a slap on
And then they get bailed out in 2008. So,
well, the thing is, and nothing has changed. I mean, the gap between rich and poor continues to grow, which is enough evidence that these fines are nothing. And as I said in the article, the banks are fined over and over and over again. This is them just paying in, whatever they're paying in their bribe to the state to let them keep doing what they're doing. And the government gets a cut of it.
Absolutely.
Put it this way. Like, if you made millions of dollars by speeding across the country, delivering packages in your car, and then you made millions of dollars doing it, Would you mind a couple speeding tickets here and there?
Exactly.
Right.
No.
Exactly.
And that's this is a little analogy that kind of just puts this thing into perspective. Mm-hmm. These guys are raking in who knows how many and getting fined a little tiny amount. At the same time, they're committing some of the worst financial crimes that you can even imagine. They're rigging markets, dude. They're doing insider trading on a massive, massive scale. And the thing is, these are currency markets, dude. They affect entire economies and they affect entire groups of working class people. If these guys make bets, oh shit, it devalues their currency. Well, that affects their purchasing power too, man. And so these guys' little bets and stuff, it's not just money and maybe a few rich people lost a couple grand or whatever, a couple $1 million, whatever. No, dude, it's like entire countries are affected by the actions of these guys. And there's like no fucking accountability when it comes down to it.
Absolutely, and that ties into something, what you just said, something Kerry said earlier, ties into a story we've got up right now. A report that was just been released from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has shown that the United States and Israel have the worst inequality in the developed world. So it's out of 34 different countries, and the United States has the least amount of inequality. And
the most inequality.
Right. It would be better if I wasn't an idiot. We could express these ideas. But
it'd be a lot better if we did have the least amount of inequality, man.
Yeah.
It would be.
as they sell it.
So what it is like some of the stats behind it is the richest 10% of the population earns 16.5 times the income of the poorest 10% in the United States. In Israel, it's a little bit less, it's 15 times. The average wealth for these 34 nations is around 9.6%. In the 80s, the rich earned approximately 7 times as much.
So since the 80s, I mean, it basically is like more or less doubled, right?
Yeah.
I mean, inequality is like basically doubled since the 80s. I mean, that's a pretty stark statistic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was reported too in 18 of these countries, the bottom 40% of households own just 3% of the wealth, while the top 10% controlled 50% of the wealth. In the United States, the wealthiest 5% has nearly 91 times the amount of money as the average citizen.
Well,
91 times.
For me, what's really really blows my mind, for lack of a better term, is that these are figures that were really comparable at the turn of the century. And that prompted so much outcry, and it prompted so much government activism. And now 100 years later, what has changed? What has the government done to really solve the problems that they were calling out 100 years ago?
Right. Well, you know,
they brought in the Federal Reserve. I thought that was going to fix everything. Oh, shit. No, it actually made everything worse, didn't it?
Just a bit. The dollar's only been completely devalued, so, you know, it's what, 96% devaluation since 1913?
It's been pretty bad, yeah, pretty bad.
1913 was an amazing year, the IRS and the Federal Reserve at the same time.
And then it all got worse in the 70s under Nixon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The country, you know, a few people even realize this, the country essentially went bankrupt, you know, in the early 70s because of the Vietnam War, like, because it was right, it was like, okay, we did Korea. And, you know, people can argue, okay, maybe Korea may or not be considered a victory, even though the country was split in half. And they spent all that money. And then they had to, and then right after that, they went into Vietnam. And then in the early 70s, the country ran out of money, man. While Nixon was in office, they couldn't really pay for it anymore. So then that's when they created what now is known as like the petrodollar. Mm-hmm. And they changed the entire monetary system.
And he took gold out.
And so in the early 70s, exactly, the money became a purely like fiat currency, which is, you know, the average fiat currency only has like a 37-year lifespan, I mean, on average, you know. So we're already like overliving our stay with this fiat currency. The other thing is that like that is when a lot of these really big, egregious policies started coming into play, like the drug war and things like that, and like this really aggressive foreign policy started like coming into play. And like in the past, when the monetary system was actually had something backing it, there was like a ceiling to the amount the government could actually like spend and what they could actually get away with, you know what I mean, because they actually had to be responsible with the money and relatively responsible with it. Now it just, since it just comes out of thin air, and literally the Federal Reserve has been printing. They recently stopped, but they were printing quantitative easing, you know, by like billions and billions of dollars a month.
Right.
You know, it was what, like $30 billion a month or something like that. It was crazy.
And here's something.
$80 billion a month. I mean,
that's weird about Nixon, that, you know, Mr. Republican, a lot of people look back at him and say, oh, you know, he wasn't that bad, whatever, blah.
Well, with Watergate, that's like child's play.
Exactly. But, you know, today you get, you know, we need Made in America, we need jobs here, blah, 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 blah. Guess why that happened? Richard Nixon opening the doors for China. Who owns our debt right now? China. Who made that happen? Richard Nixon.
True.
So Richard Nixon has his hand, as do many others, in bankrupting this country.
I have a question, actually. Since Israel is also sort of a culprit here as well, I don't know much about their banking system. Do they have central banking? What's their...
Yeah, they have the Israeli central bank.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, speaking of Israel,
here's another thing that's related to that. One of our one of the board members of the U.S. Federal Reserve is a former, I think he's a former head of the Israeli Central Bank.
Of course he is.
And now he works for the U.S. Federal Reserve. So, I mean, it just goes to show that there's probably a really cozy relationship between all of the Western central banks. Of course, the European Central Bank and the Fed, they all work together. The thing that was encouraging recently, I reported on the anti-media, was that there was a huge resistance to the ECB going into its new location in Germany. There was there was like actual riots to try to stop this central bank from opening up. I mean, these the people in Europe are tired of being ripped off by this type of system. Yeah, exactly. And like this austerity thing is completely unfair, because what's happened is that like all of these people, it's kind of like the same thing with like Social Security and all that kind of stuff. Hold on, caller from 618. Can you please mute your background?
My background is muted. What's up?
What's going on, man? What you want to talk about?
Just kind of hanging out while your show's on. And I'm going to follow your Facebook page, so I just kind of see what's going on with you guys.
I'm sitting here talking about austerity in the banking system and Israel.
All kinds of stuff. So, like, you know, the thing about austerity is it's really unfair because, like, this is stuff that people have been paying into. And it's very similar to, like, the pension crisis and stuff. It's where, like, people are sold these ideas and they're...
I got a question for you guys. I saw a photo on your Facebook I didn't really like. It was a picture of an American soldier... saluting the flag and people worshiping a cow.
Yeah, because what it's representing is, you know, it's a false idol.
It's a false idea, right?
Well, no, it's an idol. A flag is it's an idol.
Yeah, but that's kind of fucking rude, you know. Sorry for my language. Is it okay?
Sorry, man. You can say what you want. Just try to refrain from using the F word on air, please.
I'm sorry about that.
Man. Go ahead.
It's just kind of because I've done my service. You know, I did 6 years, and I got out of there with medical leave for my shoulder. And
now let me ask you a question: Did you fight for a flag, or did you fight for family members and people that you love?
I fought for my country,
the people in the country, or a flag.
I live for my country, okay? This beautiful fucking country. I got a real bad mouth. I'm sorry, but this country. I've lived here for 54 years. I was born in Germany, and it's just beautiful, okay? It's just a group of people that you would never think could be people together, but it's really beautiful, you know?
Would it exist without a flag?
For somebody that would depose something that would hate on the people that defend this country and keep us all around, it's kind of rude.
Well, here's my question. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, go ahead.
Are you convinced that a flag is synonymous with millions of people? Because what you're saying is that by posting an image that sort of makes fun of people worshiping a flag, you're saying that really reflects poorly, or that we're making a judgment about the American people, right? Am I understanding you correctly?
No, I'm plenty okay with you making a judgment on American people,
but not the flag.
So we can judge people, but don't you dare talk about a piece of cloth.
Just let this country stay how it is. You go. I swear, you guys take your, I don't know, I mean, I like you guys. I think you're great. I don't agree with today's media and how they shift focus from stuff that's not as good as it should be, you know, stuff that's kind of like we hear about all the time. That they just make money off this stuff. They only give us stuff that, you know.
But see, I think we're just representing
people get murdered and they don't say anything about it, but, you know, shit, ISIS does something. Oh, yeah, let's cover that. But I really think that the people who defend this country are the real heroes.
And I agree with you. I've got close family of mine that are veterans and stuff. But you know, the thing that I kind of want to bring back here, and as far as the meme, you know, it makes reference to the golden calf, right? The meme, and if you know any, if you've read the, you might know the story from the Bible.
Okay.
It's about the golden calf, where basically the Israelites were warned to not, you know, try to build an idol to worship and just, you know, enjoy the community that they had without having the idol. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of, I think, the reference that was being made there is that we don't whenever we build this collective idea around just a symbol or a single person or something like a flag, whatever it is, that can lead us into a situation where we're susceptible to being misled. And that's exactly the message and the lesson that was taught in the story in the Bible, is that, hey, you know, you don't need a king. You don't need a idol to worship to be a peaceful and prosperous people. You don't need any of that. All you need is your community and your family and your friends. That's the thing that was really being said there. But, you know, one of the reasons why we have been so active in this whole debate on the flag is because there was a recent trend going on online that was basically about people stomping on the flag and stuff. And there was this really big outrage about it. And, you know, it's understandable where the outrage comes from. But at the same time, the flag is supposed to represent, like, a lot of these ideals of freedom and, like, freedom of speech and stuff. So it was kind of ironic that people were saying that, you know, they shouldn't have the right to stomp on this flag or whatever. And the flag is supposed to represent people being free and having the right to do, you know, basically what they want.
Can I add one little thing, just really brief, which is that, you know, the flag is supposed to represent all these ideals of freedom. And the foundation of America was really skepticism of government in an age when government was huge and massive and really oppressive. And I think it's really funny that really what the flag represents is institutions of government. It's 13 colonies and 50 states. Like, those are all representations of government infrastructure. So I'm not sure that, in my opinion, a flag or the American flag is the best real representation of the ideals this country was founded upon.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but I really don't like the fact that you guys are, I mean, I love what you're doing. I really do.
Thank you.
I just feel that going against, like, people that serve this country, that's kind of a touchy subject, because, you know.
Well, see, for us, I don't think we attach the people to the inanimate.
You like this country.
Right. For me, okay, it's what Carrie just said. It's not a damnation of a country or people. It's trying to get people to realize that, you know, false idols come in different many forms, and that's what the flag basically is. If you put the flag in front of people that you care about and your real beliefs, you know, you are worshiping a false idol.
And our point is that the people are not their flag. You know, like, I don't think that a piece of cloth can really represent the great diversity and the great innovation of people who live in America or any other country on the planet, for that matter. I think there's far more depth to a people and to individuals than a flag can represent. And so for us, we're not drawing a connection between the people and the flag. For us, we're trying to break that connection because we value people so much.
What I think we should do is we should rally around the flag instead of stomp on the flag. We should try to make this country better than just bitch around and hate on it.
I think.
Definitely, man. You know, but here's the thing. I think at least what we're trying to do is we are trying to make the country better by providing, like, constructive criticism about some of these injustices that are being perpetuated against us, man, because they're rampant, dude. And you served in the military, and you said that you'd been injured. I mean, and you've probably had to deal with the VA system, just like my close family member has to deal with the VA system. And I know that it's a corrupted bureaucracy. There was the news broke recently that they were, like, delaying people's medical care, delaying their payments, and all kinds of different stuff. I mean, so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to provide criticism to the system rather than say, okay, yeah, the system's awesome and it's great and it's working good. No, we want to provide criticism so that it provides some pressure for these people to actually try to improve themselves. Otherwise, if we just sit here and say, okay, we're just going to take whatever they give us and accept whatever is passed down, dude, we're going to be in for a really rough scenario in the future, and we already are facing it. You know, we were just mentioning before you called in about the inequality in the U.S. The inequality, man, is, like, become the worst in the developed world. We are literally the most unequal country in the developed Western world, you know. So the system, I think, is really deserving of many different criticisms.
I do have kind of a counter-argument to that. Would you consider Saudi Arabia a developed country?
No, I think they're lunatics.
Yeah, nigga.
I think they're murderous lunatics, and I think that the United States is dead with them. And I think they get to do what they want in the Middle East, and they get no repercussions because back.
I mean, that's kind of a isolationist way of going about it, you know? See, if we go back to isolationism, look at 1940s, that didn't go very well for us.
Yeah, but, you know, the argument can be made that it was economic isolationism that helped cause World War II, man, because of the horrible actions that were wielded against the Germans after World War I, you know, prior to when they committed all those war crimes and all that stuff. I mean, the very scenario that we placed them in afterward led to a vacuum, which is what created Hitler. And Hitler filled a vacuum that was created by horrible reparations and regulations and sanctions against the German country post-World War I.
I have a question for you. So you don't believe, you don't think in isolationism, you don't like that term or that phrase. So you would be okay with China not being isolationist and having a military base right down the street from you?
We don't have any, well, we've got embassies, but we don't have military bases inside China. No, we do not.
No, I didn't ask what we had in China. I said you'd be okay with them having a base down the road from you. Because that's what we have in the Middle East.
Sure, if they're peaceful and nice people, why the hell not? I'm welcome to my country just as I would anybody.
And that's how
what
most
if they
people
flew
feel
their
about
flag?
Their country.
What?
What if they flew their flag? Would that bother you?
Are they going to be nice under that flag? Or are they going to be assholes?
Well, that's a good question about the American military,
well, consider
too.
They're way over there and we're over here. What does it matter?
I'll let you talk. Hey, I'd let you talk, man. Come on. If they're going to be nice people, I'm going to welcome into my country just as well as the next person next to me, all right? It's not about hating on the people coming into the country, okay? It's about we should be more of a family as a country. That sounds really stupid, but we should all respect each other and not hate on each other. We shouldn't stomp on the flag. We should love around the flag, okay? I don't see what throwing the flag on the ground and stomping on it's going to do for us. It's going to make us more hateful.
Yeah, I don't think it's productive either. It's not something I would personally do, but I also think that living in a country that's supposed to be based on freedom, I don't think it's my right to tell people what they can and can't do if they're not being violent. And I think the issue for a lot of us with the flag isn't so much its existence or the fact that it represents America, but the way that it's been manipulated and exploited by politicians and by government to really invoke really harmful policies.
Yeah, and it's pretty sad too when you know, as an American and you travel abroad and stuff and you experience what the reputation of the American, you know, way of life has become for some people around the world. Of course, there's a lot of people out there that still envy us. Many of them are within our sphere of influence, and there is a amount of propaganda that goes into that. But there's a lot of countries around the world that see America as the greatest threat to world peace. I mean, there was a huge, massive worldwide poll that was conducted that actually showed that the U.S., according to everybody in the world, is the greatest threat to peace everywhere. And, you know, it's kind of understandable. We touched on this last night, and there's a big story that went under the radar this last week. And it was about what was going on in Japan. There was like 50,000 people standing up protesting in Japan because they were opening a new military base on the island, on one of the islands. And there was 50,000 people standing up saying, like, we don't want this base here, you know. And I have nothing against the people that are in the military. I think most of them have good intentions, and they're people that joined up to, like, either one, help their family economically, or two, help defend their country, or both. But I think that the problem is that we've allowed this, like, bureaucratic process and this power structure take control of what the military does and doesn't. And a lot of the shit we're doing in peaceful countries like Japan and places like South Korea and stuff, I mean, why do we still have 50,000 people in South Korea when South Korea is, like, one of the most rich, developed countries in the world? You know what I mean? Like, they are more than capable of defending themselves against an economy in North Korea, which is basically constantly bankrupt. Like, they have no economic power. They have, like...
Right.
I mean, it's just so insane that we're, like, still there doing all this stuff. But, like, the thing is that it creates scenarios. It creates, like, psychological effects in the native people, the indigenous people, the people that live where we're doing all this stuff. It creates all kinds of repercussions. And it shows in these numbers from that poll it shows that people see it as a threat, or at least a threat to peace. They're not, maybe it's not a threat to them, but it's a provocation to somebody else.
Absolutely. And as far as in reference to burning the flag, I'm never going to burn the flag, because I think what that does is you're still showing that that is an idol, and you're burning that idol to show you that you don't believe in it. For me, I don't care either way. I'm not going to treat it as an idol. I'm not going to burn it, and I'm not going to worship it.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I think like, you know, burning it and stomping on it, that's a very divisive way of going about making a statement.
But you're still recognizing it as an idol.
Yeah, but you got to recognize that it's also just a political statement. And, you know, it's a political statement is a political statement. You know, and so it's there. It is what it is, you know.
Absolutely.
But is it the best way of going about doing stuff? No, it's not. But, you know, it's something that it's... It's something I think on the grander scale is just the amount of brainwashing and propaganda and the symbolism that's all, it's all linked together with the flag, and they put the stamp on all their actions, and it's just, I mean, I don't know, dude. It's
like,
it's,
you won't see Obama,
it's patriotism,
give a speech without a flag in the background.
You know, it's patriotism on steroids, you know, and it, the media and the propaganda that we've been built. Even look at the elementary school, you stand up and you give a pledge of allegiance to the flag. You look at the flag, put your hand over your heart, and you sit there and you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth. And every single kid in elementary school is basically required to do this. Yeah, you can make like religious exemptions and whatever, belief exemptions, but like for the most part, 99% of the kids sit there and salute the flag every day and pledge allegiance to it. But what happens when that flag becomes something that you don't want it to be?
Right?
Do you still want to be allegiant to it? You know, and that's the question.
Fucking leave.
You mentioned religion. Now, here's a quick question. Are you religious? Do you believe in God?
Yes, sir. I'm a Baptist.
Okay, so you're a Christian?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, see, I think that's great. And my Bible teaches me that I shouldn't worship false idols.
Okay.
And that's why I think the American flag is representative of that.
I serve and I live under this flag, okay? It's kind of a principle of, I love the people around me and I love the people near me. It's not this is my flag, and if you don't like this flag, I'm gonna fucking murder you. I'm gonna murder you. It's not one of those kind of things. I mean, I don't care if you don't like the flag. Just
cool.
It's throwing it on the ground. That's like going and bashing another person's religion. It's just screwed up.
It is, man, but I really appreciate your call. Thanks so much for calling in and sharing your opinions with
us. Yeah, man, that was
engaging.
I really appreciate your perspective, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for being civil.
Yeah, area code 205-2 Anti-Media Radio. What is your name and how you doing?
This is Chase, man. How are you, man?
Doing good, Chase. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Just been listening in, man. It's been a really good show, man.
Appreciate it. So what's your take on all that we just talked about? Or you got something else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, with the flag, like with the flag thing, I mean, I understand. I don't think anybody, especially at the anti-media, man, I mean, nobody is against Americans or anything in general, man. And I agree with all that y'all said. Me personally, man. I don't really care. It doesn't really offend me or anything if somebody stomps on a flag or burns a flag, because technically they are protected under the Constitution. Now, I don't know how everybody else feels. I mean, it doesn't matter. I like the Constitution. You know, but I don't worship the Constitution, but I don't know. I when you get into that sort of thing with the country and all that, I sort of hold the Constitution closer than I do the flag. But what kills me the most is not Americans destroying a flag, but politicians destroying the Constitution.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I think you're correct. You're 100% correct on that.
And that's what. Here lately, man, there's been people posting things on like Facebook and stuff like that. Like, we need to beat these people's asses, man. Screw them, man. This, and that. It's like, it's nonviolent things, you know? I mean, these people are performing nonviolent actions, but then it's just like, at the end of the day, it's like, man, our rights get taken away from us every day by politicians. It's almost like they're putting a lighter up to the Constitution. You know what I mean? That's just how I feel about everything that we were just talking about.
I think as far as like when it comes to the Constitution, man, I just want to throw out my personal opinion on this thing. The Constitution, I think, is like a step in evolution, right? And like, I look at humanity as like an organism that's constantly evolving, and constitutions, which were most, you know, it was like the Greeks and the Romans that first started implementing these like constitutional type of governments and stuff like that. And it was a positive step away from like monarchy and like just total, you know, total warlords and that kind of thing. But I think that we've run with this idea of like constitutional republics for like the past, you know, 2000 years. And we're yet to have one that is shown to be enduring and didn't resort back to the same issues that the Constitution originally tried to prevent. You know what I'm saying? So like, the thing is, the Constitution is a positive thing.
And it was revolutionary in its time.
Exactly. It was very groundbreaking. But I think that we need to start thinking about how can we evolve into the next step beyond a Constitution, or maybe some type of new type of Constitution that is completely different than what we have now. Because the ones that all these countries have, because like, if you look at every revolution that's happened in the past, I don't know, a couple hundred years, following the revolution, they establish a constitution.
Right.
But yet, if you look at those countries today, whether we're talking about Mexico, whether we're talking about, you know, I mean, you name any of these countries that have had revolutions, Spain, you know, countries in Europe, whatever, they're all still back in the same basic oligarchy structure that may be slightly tweaked, slightly different. Maybe a few different people own the wealth instead of a few other people. But like the main thing is that there's still just a few people that own all the wealth, that control all the resources, that are influencing over all of the trade in these countries and stuff. So like the names, the constitutions, all of that stuff changes. The flags change, all that stuff changes. But the only thing that remains and endures is the oligarchy.
Absolutely.
And it's been going on for 5,000 years. Right. It predates the Constitution. The constitutions were invented to prevent that shit. We've seen what happened with Alexander the Great. I mean, then all of a sudden it was Julius Caesar. I mean, those used to be constitutional republics, and then they become empire.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Same exact shit just happened in the U.S. in the past, I don't know, 50 years, dude. We became an empire. We've been we were born out of an empire. We just continued the empirical ways.
Okay, I've got a stat here for everybody, and I'd like to get y'all's opinion, speaking of this being an empire. The United States, if y'all haven't heard yet, just agreed to give Israel $1.8 billion in weapons. And an interesting stat is that is $3.1 million for every child that Israel killed in Gaza last summer.
Ooh.
So what's your thoughts about that, Chase?
I haven't even kept up with that, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to even think about it. It sucks to think about it too, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, we just keep funding it, you know, and relating it back to the story you were just mentioning, it's like those two countries are the highest in inequality, dude.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, so the average Israeli citizen, just like the average American, is stuck in a pretty between a rock and a hard place, right? They're probably living paycheck to paycheck. They don't own very much wealth. They're, you know, strapped for cash. They're relying on government to, one way or another, help make ends meet.
Israel gets a really, really bad rap, but I want to play devil's advocate here. The people of Israel are just like the people here. They're just living their lives, doing their thing. So people that say, I hate Israel.
The people of Israel are being victimized by their government like crazy.
Right. It's the government.
Yeah, like I would actually go out on a limb to say that the Israeli people are being victimized more than the American people by their government.
Right.
Because they actually have conscription. Like there's forced military service over there. It's not a choice. It's like, hey, if you're going to be an Israeli, you got to serve. You got to do a certain amount of time in the military and go through all that process.
Yeah.
So I mean, no, that yeah, the people of Israel are probably they're. It probably sucks to be an Israeli citizen because you're sitting there and you know that you're funding the shit. You know that you're paying in buying in. Yeah. But they're actually there and like seeing it firsthand. Like they're paying right into the destruction of their neighbors, like bombs are dropping on their neighbors a few miles away.
But to be fair, a lot of them want that.
A lot of them are brainwashed, extremely brainwashed, and they do want that. But a lot of them, just like here, are like kind of disenfranchised with all of these ideas. this foreign policy, this...
Well, that goes back to what we're talking about.
Man, you know, you know what kills me is they go over there and they, you know, a lot of people, you know, let's go over there and bomb them. Let's go over there and destroy these people's countries. But what people don't realize, you're talking about like all these terrorist organizations. Well, you got, you send somebody over there and you bomb somebody's country, somebody, you know, brother, sister, mother, father, somebody just dies. What are they going to do? They want revenge, man. That's why you have a lot of these people joining terrorist organizations. In my opinion, I mean, that's why how a lot of these sprang up, and you just.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And what you're saying has been documented by evidence, like factual evidence. What you're saying is exactly the mechanism that keeps this perpetual warfare state going. So it's, okay, let's drop bombs and we'll create terrorists and we'll have more terrorists to drop bombs on. And it's just this endless cycle of violence.
And here's what's scary. Ron Paul brought this up in the debates.
Blowback, man. It's
he brought
textbook
all this
blowback.
Up in the debates, and they turn around, and this is how they weasel their way out of it. So you're saying we created the terrorists? America didn't do that. You're saying we deserve what we get?
And oh, yeah,
I do want to say, though, as far as blowback, I looked up the definition, and it's technically unintended consequences. And call me a cynic, but I'm to the point where I view American foreign policy as very calculated and very intentional, and they know that they're creating terrorists, and they don't care. This is... I don't want to flat out be like, well, they're intending to create
terrorists. It's just like the drug war created gang members, man, created all these street gangs, man.
As long as it's geopolitically advantageous, and let's just take Libya as the prime example here. Let's just say, okay, well, Gaddafi was on the verge of forming an African Union that was going to implement a new form of currency that was going to be independent from the petrodollar. Okay.
Oh,
no. And then let's say, these are like Gaddafi's a bad guy. He's killing his people, and we're gonna go in, and we're just gonna go. And it's such a nice little soft term. Make a no-fly zone. You know what a no-fly zone entails, right? It entails dropping a shitload of bombs on all of their defense mechanisms, all of their radar, all of their anti-aircraft missiles, all that stuff. All of that stuff gets destroyed by drone strikes. That's what a no-fly zone does. And then they sit there and track down to Gaddafi and allow these guys to just assassinate him right in the streets.
Speaking of drone strikes, the Pentagon came out today and said more than likely we killed some children with our drone strike. So
this was in Syria or elsewhere?
Yeah, yes.
Probably Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq.
It was in Syria for this. It was in November 2014.
And it's the first time they've publicly really acknowledged that they did it and they didn't mean to.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be like this big accountability story,
right,
which is like, really? Now? Just two people? This is all you're going to acknowledge? Hundreds have died. Thousands have died.
These guys will risk the blowback as long as there's going to be an economic payday.
Mm-hmm.
As long as these corporations that are backing these bureaucrats that make these decisions are going to make a windfall, they'll send it in, they'll make the no-fly zone, they'll drop the bombs.
Well, and right now the blowback is guaranteeing that payday.
Exactly. And it's just making it a never-ending cycle. It's like a scheme. It's like a Ponzi scheme, but it's like just a profit-making scheme. But the problem is that it's robbing basically all of the people that are paying the taxes and stuff, all the people that are paying the, you know, paying for what's going on. You know, it's just taking from all of us, and it's sending it and turning it into profit for the contracting industries. You know what I mean? And then it's taking a bunch of our people, our young people, and putting them in harm's way, the people that join the military, putting them out there to go fight in what studies have shown are overwhelmingly resource-based wars. Dude, there's a huge problem there. And all this stuff that comes back, and even like the most, even like legitimate terrorist attacks that have happened and that will happen in the future, dude, a lot of it can be attributed to coming back from horrible policies that we've been implementing for the past, I don't know, century.
Right.
And, I mean, we've been toiling around in Iran for the past 80 years, dude.
Well, that I think, is the golden goose for them. Mm-hmm. I think they want Iran. I don't know if it's personal.
Every war hawk wants Iran.
Yeah, but that seems like that's the one they want.
It's just, it's both. It's personal and
everybody,
it's geopolitical.
Every other country seems like those countries are just in their way before they can get
It's because they've successfully overthrown so many different countries.
They did it
in Iran. That since they did it in Iran, but then it ended up getting overturned.
Blowback.
It's like they have a grudge against them. So they're like, dude, we know that we can outsmart these Iranian fools and actually overthrow their government. It's just a matter of time till we crack them. That's what they're doing.
Need to ask themselves.
It's a game to these sick bastards. Like, they literally don't take into account any of the people that die from the collateral damage of their actions.
But they hear Iran say, "Death to America, death to America." Okay, that's bad. You know, they shouldn't be doing that. Why are they saying that? Nobody wants to ask.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. Nobody wants to ask why. You know,
right?
It's like why did ISIS come into existence? They just appeared. No, there are reasons. There are policies and all kinds of stuff that it was what aided and what has created.
Wait, no, we know why ISIS came out. It's because we pulled out of Iraq too early, right? That's what they've been telling us on TV, right? Like, yo, we pulled out of Iraq too early. That's why ISIS came out. It's insane.
Well, and like you said, Chase, like, no one wants to ask those questions, but at the same time, the people who refuse to ask the questions expect the people who live in those countries to be asking questions of their own government and to be asking questions of the people that they view as oppressors, but they refuse to ask questions of American governments. So it goes both ways.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest punching bag to beat up on the other side of the world is Putin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Putin's egregious, man. Mm-hmm. They're horrible on human rights.
Mm-hmm.
They're horrible on civil rights. They're horrible on foreign policy. I mean, they're backing the Ukrainian rebels. They're backing the Syrian government. I mean, those are all bad things. But if they weren't backing those governments, the NATO would have trampled over the whole entire area already.
Did
I mean,
you
so
hear that
it's
plans weapons to Iraq today to fight ISIS.
I don't doubt it.
I did not hear.
Hey, did anybody? I'm not sure how true this is. I actually saw it in a stream like a day or two ago. But has anybody heard it? Like I said, I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody said, like, the U.S. is trying to mend ties with Russia. You know, did anybody see that?
Yeah, I've seen – there was a couple of headlines about it, but, you know, it's kind of hard to say what's actually going on. I mean, maybe they finally came to an agreement. Maybe it's – you know, I mean, if you look back in history, look back at World War II era when the Nazis were making deals with the Soviets and splitting up countries and stuff like that.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, maybe they come to agreements with these countries and they say, okay, now we can be friends again. That was a close flare-up, but okay, now that we have agreed to extract the resources from Syria together, we don't have to necessarily fight over them, you know what I mean? And so if anything does come of that, that's most likely the scenario, because the only reason these countries are in there sending in advisors, because keep in mind that there's a lot of Russian advisors within the Syrian government and training the Syrian government army and military how to like defend against all of these, you know, against ISIS and all that stuff. So like they've already got their advisors in there and stuff. So, I mean, there's only one reason why they've put so many resources and involved, you know, so much of their know-how into it is because there's a big-time geopolitical advantage to keeping Syria intact and run under their puppet government, because that is the route for the pipeline that currently is being blocked because the Syrian government's not allowing it to cross. So, you know, it's very geopolitical, man, and Russia has their own geopolitical things. The perfect other example is with Ukraine, because the East Ukraine is where they run all their pipelines into Europe, where they sell almost all of their oil and natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
Goes through these pipelines in Ukraine. They have a huge interest in keeping it, you know, keeping it under their control, man. So like, if they can come to an agreement where NATO's like, all right, man, look, just let us take 20% of the profits off this pipeline, and then we'll stop fighting you in Ukraine. The civil war would be over tomorrow.
Sean Hannity disagrees with that completely. Completely.
And he loves America.
He loves America. He has a pen. Okay, he has a pen. Where's your pen, Nick? Where's your pen? All your statements are in
I don't use pens anymore. That's why I have a keyboard.
But thank you so much for joining Anti-Media Radio. We will be back next week. Join tomorrow night with Levon. She'll be here. Peace out. This is live.
Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.